Hi, everybody. I'm Karen. I'm a compulsive overeater. And if there's any of you in a time zone other than morning, good afternoon, or good evening. So this is really quite an honor for me to be asked to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And I hope I do the honor justice. Whenever I'm going to speak at a meeting, before I start, I sit somewhere quietly, I take a few deep breaths, I say the serenity prayer, and I ask God to remove me and allow me to say what needs to be said to be of service to him and to the people in the room or on the Zoom. So hopefully that will happen. As Emily said, I've been in the fellowship for 37 years, and on Wednesday, I celebrated 15. So you can do the math. When I first got here, well, I don't even have to tell you about when I first got here because you just heard it all. The one thing I'm going to say before I get back to what I was like, I will say that there are two people on this Zoom whom I've known each for more than 30 years, maybe more than 35. And they are two of the people who mean the most to me in the world. And I'm really grateful that they're both here. So I know you guys know who you are, and thank you so much. I'm really glad that you're here. So what it used to be like, or what I used to be like, not what it used to be like, that's not what the big book says. What I used to be like, and I'll just give you a brief overview because I think we all know what our histories are, but I was a liar, a cheat, a thief from early on. I sort of grew up believing that that I got a bum rap in life. And so I justified all of my not so good behaviors by saying, you know, if you had the life I had, you'd do the stuff too. I used to, let's go back to my early age. Well, let me show you some photos. I'm going to be all over the place now, I can tell. Okay, so here you can see. There we go. So that little picture of me on the left where I'm looking so cute, I don't know how old I was there. I looked at that picture for a long time before I realized I have a Twinkie in my left hand. I had no idea. This picture to the right of that, or my right, I don't know which way it shows for you, that's probably my 10th grade picture. And you can see that there's not much of a smile and no light in my eyes. I was just kind of dead inside. The picture on the left, you can see I am the one with the shorts and the bathing suit top there. Those are my siblings. And I think I look pretty normal there, although I never felt normal in my whole life. I still really don't, except for sometimes I do. And this picture on the right is, I think, 11th grade. A little bit more of a smile, but still not much there. I'm going to stop the share. I'm going to show you another set of couple of pictures. Whoops. So that, all right, let's see. Zoom is so awesome. And I even know how to do this. Okay. So the picture on the left is in, let's see, let me get that away. Oop, didn't want to do that. Okay, so this is 1997, the one with the black top. I had been abstinent. This is a year before Joey was murdered. Well, not quite a year, where I think I look pretty good, actually. I like the way I look there. And then the picture on the right of that is 9 years into my 10-year relapse, where you can see quite the contrast, quite the weight gain. All right, so that's that. Now you see what I look like. When I first got here, looking at people's pictures really helped me a lot. So that's why I thought I'd show them. But what I used to, eat sweets all the time. When I was young, I was taller than my siblings. So whenever any of the goodies came home from the grocery store, I would hide them in the top shelf of the pantry behind the cat food because my sister and my brothers couldn't reach it. Because I would hide stuff in my bedroom. I would hide stuff all over the place because I found that when I needed my sugar fix, I really needed my sugar fix. I remember, and I grew up in a house of not my place to call them anybody else a compulsive overeater, but everybody was overweight. Everybody ate a lot. I remember one time I was searching for something sweet to eat and I found my mother's cookies in the dryer. So, you know, we all hid stuff. I had an uncle who was 400 pounds. My grandmother was 300. My grandfather was 300 pounds. My mother, I'm not sure, somewhere between 200 and 300. So, I mean, I have a history of overweight people. But I did not come to OA to lose weight. When I was about, I don't know how old I was, I realized that I didn't stand a chance in hell at losing weight, so why try? I tried a couple of commercial weight loss programs and had that pre-digested liquid protein and other disgusting stuff. It never worked. None of it ever worked. I might have lost 3 pounds. One time I got weighed and I lost 3.25 pounds and I was the hero. I was in seventh grade. They wanted me to, you know, take a spin and look how beautiful. Didn't last. Excuse me. When I got a little bit older, actually when I was in high school, I used to stop at the 7-Eleven between my house and the high school and walk up and down the candy aisle. And sometimes I would buy stuff and sometimes I would steal stuff. And sometimes I would do both. And I'd go home with my bag of stuff. And this time I had my own bedroom and I would lay down on my bed, close the bedroom door, which was on that side, put the bag of candy on my left side, lay down on my bed, read and eat. Because again, I didn't know it then, but I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. I didn't realize it, but I just ate a lot. I also ate to the point where I would pass out. Anybody who says you can't pass out from eating is wrong. I was living in an apartment in West LA and it was just me. And I had a well-worn path in the carpet from the sofa to the refrigerator. And you could see that that was the path I always took because I kept going in there and opening the fridge and looking for something. Of course, I lived by myself. And if I did that every 10 or 15 minutes, nothing changed, but that didn't stop me. And I used to lie down. I of course, I'm always lying down. I'm a big football fan. And back in those days, we'd have double headers on Sundays and I'd be watching a game and it was the third quarter. And then suddenly I'd look at the TV again and it was halftime. I would pass out and miss the rest of that game in the beginning of the next. What brought me to OA was not a desire to lose weight because, again, I stopped thinking about weight back then. Thinking about it now, which really pisses me off. But I came in because I couldn't stop eating. And the day that brought me to OA in late January of 86 is I had been going into the kitchen and eating this package of crackers. I'd have these crackers. And I would get out a bunch of crackers and put strawberry jam on them and another layer of crackers. And I'd make these little cracker mountains, take a glass of orange juice, plastic, of course. And I was using paper plates because God forbid I should wash dishes. And I would go and I'd just eat all these things. And I'm going back and forth. And at this point, I'm unbuttoning my pants. I'm unzipping my pants. I'm wearing sweats. I mean, I would wear loose fitting things because I'd eaten so much. And sometimes it would happen that I could barely breathe because I'd eaten so much. This particular day, went into the kitchen. There was about this much left in that package of crackers, and I could barely breathe. And I looked at them, and I thought, I have no room to put them. Can't eat anything else. Oh, my God. I don't think I said, oh, my God. I realized I was compelled to finish the package, and I realized I couldn't stop. And it was then, and only then, that I realized that I could not stop eating. And I'd heard about OA a little while before that, called the Los Angeles Intergroup hotline or recorded number and found there was a meeting on that Wednesday. So I went to my first meeting then. And as Emily read in my introduction, I've never left. I still remember the speaker at my first meeting. We're still friends, interestingly enough. That's a long time ago. I actually am lucky that I made some really, really, really good friendships early on. And I think it's because we're all in the rooms together. We all suffered and struggled together. We all recovered together. We all celebrated together. And it's like it says in the big book where we are like passengers from a shipwreck who all recover. We share that camaraderie. And even if I go along a long time without seeing somebody from back then, we still know each other and we still love each other and it's still there. And what I found in my first meeting, and or maybe my second meeting, I don't know, lost a lot of brain cells since then. The thing about being in OA is you guys get me and I get you because we are each other. And the analogy I like to use is I can tell you the punchline to the joke without telling you the joke, and you get it because you know. And there's that. It's the first place I ever felt I belonged in my whole life. I played softball, I played basketball, I was very involved. But I never connected with anybody enough to keep friendships. I'm envious of people who, you know, meet every year or every couple of, however often, with people they've been friends with since kindergarten or since elementary school. I don't have that. I don't have those connections. I didn't know how to make a friend or how to be a friend. I do now. And I learned that in these rooms. So I didn't know much about this thing called abstinence, as many of us don't when we come in. But I listened to people. I asked questions because you can see how shy I am. I identified a food plan with a sponsor. We didn't call it a food plan back then, but the deal was 3 meals a day, nothing in between, anything I want. And the reason we did it that way is, you know, I heard people saying, you know, I ate 3 meals a day, no sugar, no flour, no this, no that. If I could do that on my own, I wouldn't need the fellowship. I wouldn't need OA. So there was no guidelines except for have a breakfast and stop, have a lunch and stop, have a dinner and stop. And I'd never done that my whole life. So I would have these huge meals. Well, my breakfast was always, well, sometimes it was big too. But I'd have big lunches and big dinners. And I remember specifically thinking I better eat enough at lunch to hold me to dinner because I didn't know if I would survive until dinner. And I also had candy with my lunch specifically, because that was okay. It was an opening and a closing of a meal. After I'd been abstaining for about a year and 2 months, I got a message in my head that said, start asking for the willingness to give up sugar. And so I started asking for the willingness to give up sugar as part of my morning prayers. And a couple of days after that, I thought, oh, I haven't had any candy or sweets, and I didn't want it. So that was evidence to me that it's not up to me, that my higher power, whom I call God, is the one that takes care of everything and does everything, because I don't have that ability by myself. And I found that over time, as I started coming to meetings, getting involved, because again, remember, as I say, I didn't have a group of friends. I didn't fit anywhere. I had friends, but I didn't, you know, people would go out and do things and I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be part of it. I was not invited. But when I came to OA, I became part of it. And the reason I think I became part of it so well and so quickly is because I jumped into service right away. I was in OA for a short time when my Wednesday night meeting had elections. And they talked about these service positions, and they were for 6 months each. And there was this thing called delegate, something, some places they call it an intergroup rep. And the thing to do was I would have to go to this delegates meeting once a month, then go back to my meeting and report back. So 6 months, six times. I thought, I can do that. It's six times. I can do that. And I did. And that was the beginning of an incredible journey of service. And Emily read it all to you, all the different things that I've done. And I think for me, service is the most important thing. Well, one of the most important things, there's a lot. But what it did for me is it gave me a place to belong, where I mattered. I was going to say the in crowd, but it was a group of people who were working together toward a common goal, which was serving God, serving the fellowship, and recovering. And the other cool thing about that is OA gave me a place that if I wasn't there, people missed me. People would call and say, hey, where are you? Are you okay? That never happened in my whole life. And nowadays, or for years, I could walk into a meeting back in the days when I could walk into a room. People were happy to see me and I was happy to see them. It's amazing. Again, that fills all that stuff filled my heart so much to the point where I didn't need to be stuffing food down because my heart was full. And it still is. Whenever, no matter how bad I feel or what a crappy mood I'm in or whatever's going on with me, whenever I come to a meeting, my mood lifts. It's amazing. It's just wonderful. And I love it. Okay, so I'm giving service. I'm abstaining 12 and a half years. I became an Australian permanent resident. I'm living in Australia. My mother has a heart attack. I come home 1997. She survived that, but I decided, you know, as long as she was in the hospital, I'd stay home. About a year later, my brother's murdered. And I can talk about it now without falling apart, but I couldn't for a long time. And at a certain point, it got to be so horrific that I picked up the food and I picked up everything. I picked everything but pizza. 1989 was my last pizza, except a couple of years ago, I had three slices of pizza in rapid succession before I realized what I was doing. And then I left the room where the pizza was. And since then, I think I've also had sugar twice in the last 2 or 3 years, I think. I don't believe really, except for that 10-year relapse, I don't believe that a slip means I have to start over. Now, if I'm going to eat compulsively or eat stuff that I would prefer not to eat, or that's better for me not to eat, if I do that over a certain period of time, to me, that's a relapse I have to look into. I don't really believe in starting over, because I think of something I heard years ago. I'm in California. If I'm going to take a road trip to New York and I get lost in Chicago, I'm not going to drive all the way back to California and start all over again and go to New York. Instead, I'm going to take my car, turn it around, face the right direction, and continue on to New York. Thank you, Janice. And so the other thing I'll say on that topic is when I eat stuff whenever I do anything that is not sort of what I'm happy about or feels appropriate to me, my response that I learned from my sponsor is, oh, well. You know, oh, well. Okay, so because we're getting close to the time to acknowledge Unity Day in the moment of silence, Unity Day is important because we extend the hand and heart of OA to those who still suffer. As we do that, we are mindful of the unity with diversity policy, which respects our differences. That unites us in the solution to our common problem. So I jotted down some notes the other day about differences and how they don't really matter. So I know in my years of being here, I have heard there are so many different ways of working the program. There are very strict ways, structured plans. There are offshoots. There are a vision for you meetings. There are how meetings. There are, I can't remember the other meetings. At the beginning, there was gray sheet and moderate mealers and blue sheet and orange sheet. And every meeting I go to, many meetings I go to have different formats. So there's so much variety. Also, there are people who identify as a compulsive overeater, anorexic, bulimic, restrictor, a newer one I've heard called orthorexia, new for me, vomiter, compulsive exerciser, laxative abuser, back to that moderate mealer. So many different types. So, you know, we used to say, pardon my mentioning religion, I'm Jewish, you get 10 Jews in a room, you're going to get 14 opinions. I think you get 10 compulsive overeaters in a room, you're going to get 14 opinions. Also, there are gay and lesbian meetings. There are meetings focused on Black folks. Asian people, double winners, people in other programs. There's artists in abstinence. There are meetings that focus on disabled folks. That's just, you know, we are as diverse as any group of people you'll ever know, in my opinion and in my experience. But there is something that's so critical about remembering what connects us. What connects us is this desire to recover, heal, get better from the ravages of this disease that we all share. We share it in different manifestations. Not everybody is exactly the same. We all have different life experiences. I was raped when I was 11 years old. Didn't remember that till I was in my 20s. I mentioned Joey, my little brother. Not long ago, in December, I was in a very serious car accident. I spent 3 weeks in the hospital. I broke my back. I have a hand injury that I'm going to go get. I still don't know what's wrong with it. I'm getting it checked out this week. Earlier this week, I had surgery on my foot, not related to the car accident. I'm sitting here with my foot up. You can't see it. So I got lots of pain. I got lots of problems. I got, you know, we all do. We all have lots of pain. We all have lots of problems. We all have tragedies. Both of my parents died. I'm an orphan, which sucks. I really want to call my mom. I can't even tell you how badly. But we all share this connection, which is so amazingly awesome. And the other thing to think about is in about a minute or so, we are going to be quiet for a minute, and hundreds of thousands of people all around the world, not just America, all around the world, there's going to be a boatload of people sharing this moment of silence to express our gratitude for the OA program in all its manifestations. And my goodness, I am getting goosebumps. I've been overseas. I've traveled a lot. I know people in a lot of different countries in OA, and also from Zoom, I've met more people all over the place. It's really, really cool and awesome. And now we're going to be quiet for a moment, for 1 minute, and express our gratitude for the OA program. Okay, that was lovely. I think I'm still goosebumped. That's so powerful. I remember the first time I was at an observance of Unity Day, and I think it was a Unity Day event. We were all in the same room, and everybody joined hands. And I don't know how many people there were. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. There's something about being in a room where I'm feeling the power and strength of everybody in the room. And I will tell you what, I am a firm believer that anybody who is at an OA meeting, whether in person or on Zoom, is in recovery. Whether you binged before the meeting or after the meeting or in the middle of starving or whatever, just by being in a meeting, I believe we're in some degree of recovery, which I think is really awesome. In fact, that's kind of how I got to the point of God, belief in God. And if you don't like the word God, change it in your head to higher power, and then it'll work, or whatever word works for you. Tree, doorknob, whatever it is. Well, the thing I know about a higher power is I need a higher power, and I know I'm not it. But when I first came to OA, I didn't really, I had a bargaining God. God, if I do this, then you'll do that. If I cheat, bad things will happen. If I don't cheat, good things will happen. Actually, I'll tell you what, I went to a business appreciation dinner way back in 1980 something. And we all put our business cards in a big glass bowl. And they had these drawn in this raffle. And I remember I started to put two in because I thought, well, if I put two in, I'll increase my chances of winning. But I'd been in OA for a little while by then. And I thought, no, that's cheating. So I just put one card in. And would you believe I won the grand prize? I won a trip to Singapore and four nights at the Hilton Hotel there. Can you believe it? So don't cheat, Karen. I just love that. Anyway, I forget sometimes that I work this program really hard. When I get up in the morning, say a prayer, sometimes it's the third step prayer, and I started saying another one that I learned from a non-OA approved literature. I also read the For Today book. This is For Today. It's just got this cool cover on it. I abstain every day to the best of my ability. Every night before I go to bed, I send an email to one of my two sponsors, and I've been doing that every night for 15 years and a few days now. And in that email, I write everything I put in my mouth that day, and I'm really honest. It's another thing I learned from my sponsors, how important honesty is. In fact, when she talks about her abstinence, one of the first things she says is honesty. If I've eaten something embarrassing or done something embarrassing, and I don't want to tell anybody, I still tell her and even admit it at meetings because, if I keep it inside, then it's going to fester like a splinter in my finger, and then it's going to infect me and bad things will happen. So I get it out and I don't have to carry it around. So I tell her everything I've eaten, and there's five things I'm grateful for, and I'll talk about stuff that's happened during the day. Sometimes it's like I'm getting ready to go to bed and I think, oh, I don't want to do it. I just want to go to bed. I never missed a night, even when I had shoulder surgery, because my wife said I dictated it to Marilyn and she typed it for me. I did miss, I think, two nights after my car accident. It might have been three. I can't remember now, because I was in the hospital and I was not in good shape. And I'd like to say I was perfect. But evidence that I'm not, which is fine. I know that one of the reasons I never wanted to miss a night is because I was afraid that would give me permission in my own mind to miss more nights. The other thing I've been doing for a little while, I lost track of time now, is I have another fellow member of this fellowship who I send three things I'm grateful for every night. And she sends me her three things she's grateful for every night. She has a group of people she sends that to. And she said, well, I don't know if she suggested it or I suggested it. She probably did because she's smarter than I am. And so I send her those three gratitudes. Sometimes I'll steal from my email to my sponsor. Other times I'll do completely different ones. The email I send to my sponsor, the first gratitude is always abstinent. I'm always grateful for my abstinence. I have another sponsor now that I'm working the steps with. The sponsor that I email at night, it doesn't work in her schedule to talk every day or to go through the steps. And so she gave me permission and encouraged me to find somebody else to work the steps with. So I got up through four with this one sponsor, and now and I did part of the fifth. I haven't finished four, but anyway, she said, let's study six and seven. So I'm doing a very deep dive into step six and seven. And what's so cool is, in the big book, there's about this much on six and this much on seven. In the 12 and 12, there's more. But as I'm reading this, studying step six with her, I am learning stuff that I never knew. And I love that. See, that's the other thing about this fellowship. 37 years, for some sounds like a really long time. For others, and a lot of my friends, it's not as long because they're 40 and 50 years in the fellowship. Doesn't matter. The time doesn't matter. But it's the willingness to learn and the open-mindedness to be able to learn new things. One of the promises in the after the ninth step, it says we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. I actually added to that. I say, I intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle me or that I've never encountered before. I've never been in a near-fatal car accident until December. I'm facing PTSD. I have anxiety. I would have a car, but occasionally I'm in the car with my wife, and I have doctor's appointments, and we're trying to do other things. And God bless you who sneezed. I'm getting less terrified, but the first, you know, it's terrifying for me to be in a car. When I see a car coming on side, anyway, I close my eyes and my whole body goes like this, but I'm doing it. I'm getting outside help because I know sometimes, as I was taught years ago, OA is only designed to go so far. And sometimes we need outside help. And I'm watching the clock. Thank you, Janice. I was going to say I have 2 minutes left. So without bouncing around all over the place anymore, I want to, well, first I will say one of my favorite lines. God has not brought me along this far to drop kick me out the door now. And I just love that, because no matter how bad things get or how good things get, I know that there's a higher power who is behind me. Sometimes I don't feel his presence. Sometimes, you know, I get into despair. I get into great fear and anxiety, little bouts of depression, but there's something deep inside, back in the back of my head or in my heart, that knows that I'm being taken care of. You know, I had a brother who died before I was born, and I grew up believing that Barry should have lived and I should have died. I now know, even though that tape still runs through me, that if I was supposed to have died, I would be dead by now. There were plenty of opportunities for me to be dead. God obviously has some reason he wants me here. And I don't exactly know what that is, and I don't need to know. I strive to be of service to him and to others. Sometimes I'm very selfish and very self-centered and think only of myself. But then something happens to jar me out of that. And I realize that the greatest joy for me is to do something to benefit somebody else. And the last thing I will say is, no matter what happens, I encourage you not to give up. Not to give up. I've put on some weight since this car accident. I'm frustrated and I hate it, but I'm not giving up and I'm not going away. In my relapse, I would sit in meetings and cry, but I didn't give up. So please, please, please don't give up. Keep coming back, because there are miracles here, and each and every one of you on this meeting, in my opinion, is a miracle. And I thank you for listening, and I turn the meeting, I think, back to Emily.
Yes, thank you so much, Karen. That was fantastic. We've got 10 minutes of open sharing. I am just going to go ahead and turn off the recording. So Janice, if you can call on people as needed while I turn off the recording. Thank you.
All right. So we would love to hear from some of you in this 10-minute